The Guardian.
Hiya. Welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and on this week's show, we'll be talking heavy psychedelia and prog workouts with Yesaya. We'll be chatting about new music from Crystal Castles, The Kooks, and Tapes and Tapes. We'll be discussing the finer aspects of pronunciation when we delve into your feedback. First off this week, though, we're jumping into a test tube and hoping for a chemical reaction with this lot. That was After Hours by We Are Scientists, our guest on this week's show. Now, it's fair to say that Chris Kane and Keith Murray, aka We Are Scientists, don't take themselves too seriously. In fact, they don't seem to take anything seriously whatsoever. So, when we sat down in the pod last week, I tried to get them to at least sport a frown as I asked them, why does your album sound so 1980s?
Well, it was between that and the 1990s.
And the 1990s aren't quite ready yet for a rehabilitation, are they?
Hey, tell that to Nickelback, my friend. Tell that to Nickelback.
They are still the 90s, though. They're not coming through for the second
wave.
Fair enough. Still stuck where they were.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say you've added a fair degree of synthesized musical properties into this album that maybe weren't there on your first? And what brought that about?
Yeah. We couldn't buy a synth before, not because people wouldn't sell them to us, but because we didn't have the money to pay for them.
Don't the record company lend you them?
No, we made the last album without a record company and then sold it to a record company.
Oh, I see. Wow.
No big deal for us.
Some people have described this album as a band looking for a hit.
As a band desperate to sell out.
Groping for a hit.
Is that a problem, though, to have a hit record?
It's a despicable sellout move.
I hate anybody that would enjoy success.
Because that is not why we're in this business. Not for people.
The idea of people working really hard and then having other people respond well to that really makes me so mad.
I'll tell you why I got into this business. I got into this business so that really hip people who wear the right clothes and know how to not pay
like
for
myself.
And download music could listen to my music.
Yeah.
Not so a bunch of squares who work a 9-to-5... can listen to my music. I think it's easy and fun to rip on hipsters because nobody actually identifies themselves as a hipster. I mean, like, anyone listening is going to think it's absolutely hilarious, the level of hypocrisy right now in the studio of Keith Murray and Chris Kane from We Are Scientists ripping on hipsters. But that's what it always is. No one else cares about hipsters. The only people who rip on hipsters are hipsters because they're the only ones aware that hipsters exist. No one else cares. Everyone else thinks it's the youth. They just think of it as the young folks.
You guys have spent a lot of time in the UK over the course of your career. Why would that be?
The strength of the pound. British pound.
Is that not
inverse
for you?
You can just come up here and collect pounds,
oh, collect pounds
and then go home.
Yeah. And then change them.
And show everybody our pounds.
Yeah. But is it something that you found your music got a more receptive audience over here than it was initially doing in the States?
We did find that.
Mm. And why did you think that was?
Good taste.
Taste is much, much better here. Your idea of what the mainstream is much more awesome than what America's idea of what mainstream is.
Can I just look at your face and see whether you're smiling?
No, I'm totally serious.
Well, what have you learned about the UK while you've been here?
Everything.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There is nothing you don't... Do you know my bank account number?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
You don't actually want to announce it on the...
No, I won't.
Yeah, let's not put
I won't,
it
don't
on
Don't force me. 61925.
Easy.
Stop it. Your brain thrust mastery
is
taking over.
We're scanning you.
Let's go back to the UK because you said you knew everything about the UK. Mm-hmm. I don't quite believe you. But what do you like about UK music right now? Because you're quite close to the Arctic Monkeys, etc. Matt Helders has played with you for a few shows.
Mm.
Is he still playing with you?
no.
so to speak.
No.
We fired him.
You fired him for incompetence.
He messed up too much.
Not first of all, yeah. What happened to your other drummer, Michael Tapper?
We shot him into space on a mission, on a secret mission. That's all I can tell you.
On a brain thrust mastery.
I've probably already told you too much.
So, we suspect he'll be back in like 300 years. He'll still be the same age, but everything he knows will be gone.
Do you ever stop? Do you ever sit down and look at each other and go, okay, let's be sincere with each other for once? There may actually be some kind of rupture in our relationship.
We're sincere with each other.
We are very
sincere.
It's
me. Who's being battered.
You think a stranger can come into the... A relative stranger can come into the room and
yeah, we have
penetrate
known each other for
our inner sanctum? You're crazy, man.
Yeah, I suppose. If you actually put your most tender parts on display, then you might actually end up making some heart-rending music rather than this pop sellout nonsense that you've
come out with. Heart-rending music?
Uh-oh. Yeah. The interview took a turn.
Who wants heart-rending music? You mean like Enya?
Yeah. She's not. She's more mystical. By the way, I'm aware that I keep asking you questions, you don't answer them, and then I move on. I will come back to them later on. What do you actually take seriously as individuals? Apart from your music, we'll take that as a given.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just accept that without really examining
it. Querying it.
Yeah.
Okay. No, shall we? Shall we look at how you take your music seriously? How many hours do you practice a day?
Zero.
About 0 hours a day.
Keith practiced a lot when he was a little kid.
I was a little kid. I ran those scales. Yeah, and my skills have been degrading since then.
And how long will it take you to write an individual song, on average?
I'll give it 3 minutes.
No.
The length of the song. It's directly proportional to the length of the song.
Although there are times that we've written songs and been like, and then we just repeat that and it's done.
Yeah.
So we wrote a 3-minute song in about a minute and a half.
In a minute.
Yeah.
Why don't you think at the end of what you've done in 3 minutes, maybe with a little bit more effort, we could make this better than
that? That would be a different song.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then we'd have written a new song.
Yeah.
Which we do.
And we already wrote 11. That's a record. Let's go home.
But ultimately, it's like a clone in some way. You are just taking the genesis of one track.
Well, yeah,
and replicating.
I mean, new tracks,
it's like
new
twin,
tracks,
like Schwarzenegger and
Danny DeVito.
Twins.
Yeah, they're twins, but they're quite different.
Them.
Sometimes we'll sit down and write a brand new song from scratch. Sometimes we'll try to play a song that we wrote an hour ago.
Who's
we'll
your favorite band of all time?
Danny DeVito
is not a band. He's a fucking. He's an actor. He's an individual for starters.
Something
he's not
me,
a collective.
Something tells me Danny DeVito plays harmonica.
I'm bored of that one now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And one of the few benefits of actually being in this room with you today is that I do get to attempt to lead the conversation.
That's true.
Fair enough.
That's true.
What do you hope to learn about yourselves over the next year? Where would you like to be as individuals?
Comprehensive knowledge.
Uh huh.
Of ourselves.
Oh, of yourselves.
Yes.
Would you say that you as individuals are the greatest mysteries you've encountered?
But I wonder, am I?
Is I the greatest mystery?
And I'm broken. I really am broken.
Come on.
I used to enjoy this. I used to enjoy this sort of thing.
Fuck up.
It was just a chat.
When you were a younger man.
Yeah. Can we go back one question then?
Yeah.
What are you hoping to be at the end of this year?
Oh.
Are you going to be back in the studio? Are you going to be recording again? Or is it just live?
It'll probably be live through the end of the year. I think live is probably not going to end until the beginning of next year. Maybe end of January, let's say.
Not too arbitrarily. Do you ever get weary of playing? Do you ever feel that you might be doing the same thing? Repeating yourselves?
I think we get wary of continuing to spend our lives in this way. But touring remains fun in some respect, always. And it's always fun as long as it's kind of getting bigger and changing, fair point, it's not.
That was Chris Kane and Keith Murray of We Are Scientists, and their Brain Thrust Mastery album is hovering outside the top 10 as we speak. You may wish to give it a push onwards. And don't forget to stay tuned, for we have a live track from them at the end of the show. Bueno. Now, let us reconfigure our aspect ratio and change into review mode. Yes, it's Singles Club. With Rosie still away in Goa, she's set to return with a series of unusual piercings just next week. This week's text version has been written by Joe from out of the band Metronomy. work that one out. But here in the studio, things are a little more as we like to expect them, because here to help me review this week's singles are Laura Barton and Michael Han.
Hello, Paul.
Hello. Hello, Paul. Hello, Laura. How are you both? Are you both well?
Very well, thank you, Paul.
Good.
You're looking increasingly like Ronnie Van Zandt out of Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Lynyrd Skynyrd.
With your crazy hair and your wild man of the south beard.
I did put it to you earlier that I thought I looked like the lead singer out of Yesair, and you just raised your eyebrows at that one.
You are one bird that cannot change.
I don't know. That's presumably a Lynyrd Skynyrd reference.
It's Free Bird, man. It's Free Bird.
It's over my head. This is what happens when generations clash. Anyway, I'm glad to hear that you're both very well, because we're going to start listening to music now. We're going to start with a particular track that's called Courtship Dating by Crystal Castles. That's Crystal Castles with Courtship Dating. Crystal Castles are computer man Ethan Kath and vocalist Alice Glass, and they hail from the Canadian megalopolis of Toronto. Thanks to a unique innovation which saw them stick the sound chip from an Atari games console into their keyboard, the band now sound like a Game Boy orchestra. They've done umpteen remixes for artists like Klaxons and Offie, performed on an episode of Skins, Natch, and take their name from the castle in She-Ra. Michael?
I'd rather listen to Andrew Castle than Crystal Castles. They're terrible.
Do you mean GMTV's Andrew Castle?
I mean GMTV's. I'm former British tennis star Andrew Castle. In fact, Crystal Castles have all the manifold virtues of English tennis in the 80s. They're rubbish. They're terrible. I believe the hipsters like this. Are they still called hipsters, actually? Because you're young, you can tell me.
Scenesters now, I read.
Scenesters.
There's a lot of different acts around this kind of theme at the moment, all the kind of A-track things, or even your MGMT sounds, not entirely dissimilar.
Or your GMTV sounds.
Or your GMTV. But what do you think distinguishes them from this lot?
I think MGMT write proper songs with proper tunes and all those things that old people like me kind of like. Crystal Castles, it sounds like they spent 2 hours in the studio and thought, let's make some annoying noises. And the kids will love it. Well, listen to me, young people. I'm not the kids. I'm the old folks. And the old folks say no to this kind of squawky squonk.
Laura, do you like?
I have tried really hard to like this album because lots of people I know and like it. I didn't want them to be some kind of barrier between me and my friends. So I've listened to it quite a lot and I hadn't really got into it, truth be told. Then I heard this song in isolation and I liked it.
Oh.
I'm sorry, Michael Han, because... Yesterday I was discussing with you about that I didn't like Crystal
Castles. Truth be told, we were sitting in a church yesterday evening at the XL Recordings thing discussing how much we dislike Crystal Castles and agreeing how much more we like to cut copy in that whole theme of hipster-friendly, synthesizer-based duos from the former colonies.
I'm afraid I've deserted you. It may just be this track, it may just be today, Michael, but I do actually like this one.
What is it that made you change your mind?
It seems quite graceful by itself. I agree with Michael that it seemed quite squawky skrunk when you listen to the whole album. But this one, it did seem strangely graceful, especially that very last bit.
I will actually concede that this is my favourite out of a bad bunch. But Agadoo's better.
What is also better is Dance by Justice, which came out a year ago and had very, very similar vocals. But nobody really likes that song, do they? So we shall move on. Courtship Dating by Crystal Castles, but now Always Where I Need to Be by The Kooks. That's The Kooks with Always Where I Need to Be. This is the first single from the second album by Brighton's crowd-pleasing band called Conk, after the name of Ray Davies' studio in which it was recorded. Lead singer Luke Pritchard said of the album, "I want this album to be big. I want our singles to come on the radio and for people to literally have their heads blown off by them." The album is officially Zane Lowe's most anticipated album of the year. Laura, before Michael, I'm sure Michael's got something to say on this, before he gets going, are there any place in your heart for the Kooks?
there is a place in my heart for that. Well, not my heart, maybe in my lungs or something. My bile duct. I think it's obvious they want to be big. It sounds really razor-like light. But as I was saying to Michael on the way up to the pod just now, to me it sounds very Milkman.
Explain Milkman. This isn't some obscure 80s indie band I'm missing out on. This is the sort of thing that a Milkman might listen to might be played in a Milkman's truck.
It's just when you think of Milkman, you think of some kind of jovial, chirpy, nice, pleasant.
Yeah.
It doesn't set me ablaze or blow my head off.
The thing that's different about the Kooks and Milkman is that you don't have to give the Kooks £10 at Christmas in order for them to continue to deliver the following year.
And many people choose to, yeah.
Now, I'm disappointed in myself because that was much my favourite of this week's singles. The Kooks have not rocked my world in the past. I don't imagine that Conk is going to rock my world, and I have to confess I've had it for several weeks and not actually listened to it yet. So imagine my surprise when I put that on earlier, thinking I ought to have an opinion about it, and think, this is really good. You see, it's got all those old people signifiers that I like melodies and chord changes that I recognise, but also, slightly soppily, it reminded me a bit of meeting my wife, that line in the chorus about I always knew that we'd get together someday.
Laura.
I just forgot to say that I like the bit where he shouts like a drunken man halfway through.
Do-do-do-do.
Oh, I love do-do-do's, and I love the crunchy guitars. They're really great, muscular, crunchy guitars.
What do you think about his changing register, his vocal technique?
It's so Burrell, isn't it?
Well, I just think that's the primary, most notable feature of this song, is that
do you think his voice is breaking?
Well, I suspect it's already broken, and he's trying to affect a degree of sophistication in his singing voice by saying I can do these two different registers, but I find that difficult to get beyond that, and I find the lyrics rather banal. Which
I only heard the only line that registered me was the one I cited. The rest of it just kind of passed me by in a daze because I was marvelling at the fact that I actually liked the tune.
No, we've actually got one positive response to a song, and we're only 2/3 of the way through now.
Hooray!
So which is better than you might have hoped when we looked at this original list. That was the Kooks, but this is Hang 'Em All by Tapes and Tapes. That, as promised, was Tapes and Tapes with Hang 'Em All. Tapes and Tapes are from Minneapolis and comprise of four members, Josh, Matt, Jeremy, Eric, or as they sometimes prefer it, Take 1, Take 2, N1 and N2. They were perhaps the first ever blog buzz band, as music blogs raved about them and brought them to the attention of the mainstream back in 2006. In the end, though, their album The Loon didn't turn them into the new REM, so it seems like they became the first blog band backlash band, too. Their second album, Walk It Off, comes out on XL next month and will be accompanied by a series of sponsored walks for charity. Don't you know? Michael, I can imagine that Tapes and Tapes might be something that might be in your general
Tapes and Tapes fit into my general ballpark, but I don't think this is very good, and I think the second album's a shocker.
Right.
I thought The Loon was pretty good. I didn't think it quite merited the amount of buzz and hype around it, but it's an exact replication of the Clap Hands Say Yeah pattern. Intriguing first album. They got wildly overhyped. Really, it should have been let to gestate and develop like a particularly nice yeast-based product. Instead, it was thrust upon us. The same thing happened with Tapes and Tapes. They should have been allowed to develop. But what's interesting this time is the absolute lack of anticipation about the Tapes and Tapes comeback. There was some anticipation about Clap Your Hands. There's none about Tapes and Tapes. And frankly, they don't merit it. The records, it's an average indie record. This song is an average indie song. You could have picked pretty well any song off the album and it would have made an equally unmemorable single. There was so much buzz that everyone thought Tapes and Tapes had to sell, X zillion copies of the last one. And when they didn't, everyone went, oh, they're over. And it almost feels like a depressed album, this one. It almost feels like they maybe feel a bit as if the game's up and they're doing something less melodic, darker, kind of moodier.
Mm. Laura, do you find any perk in there?
Not really perk. One of the reasons that I like tapes and tapes. I like the last album. I don't take exception to it in the way that Han does this album.
I like the last album.
No, this album.
Sorry.
I like this single, but I like the fact they've got this sort of strange bitterness sometimes to their song.
Lyrical content.
Maybe even lyrical content.
The song Hang 'Em All.
No, but also, I think you feel it also in Cowbell, the song Cowbell. Mm. And similarly, there's that sort of strange force that seems to be propelling you to the end of the song, and they sort of they all seem to be delivered as if they've got to get somewhere very urgently and angrily.
I agree with you on that. I think there's a degree of subtlety about just the lack of range in this song, about it being low key and downbeat, but just driven as well, and never really stopping, and the understated way in which he delivers his lyrics, and almost kind of monotone some of the times.
And that sort of
comes quite atmospheric, I think.
And I think that sort of coupled with the bass line, I think it's an amazing bass line, which is probably because of Dave Fridman, really. But I think it brings a real sense of menace to the song.
I thought we were listening to Apache when it started, by the way.
It's interesting you say it, because I actually really hate the bass line. And I think across the album, I need to listen to it again, actually, to refresh my memory. But the thing that struck me was kind of how the lower registers, the whole album, are right in the red, and there's this really overloaded feeling, but then with slightly spindly stuff on top. And I found that an intensely annoying combination of sounds.
I found that a preferable one to the other way around, I think.
But that's probably because you kind of like more jangly stuff sometimes, don't you?
Well, and really, let's be honest.
Bassy stuff.
Let's be honest, it's because I'm 67.
And you're not 67.
No, I'm 63.
Hang 'Em All by Tapes and Tapes is out next week. Last week's tracks came under inspection on the blog, and in some perverted twist on the Easter tale, you couldn't resist crucifying Madonna. Martin Cooling said, "I sat and listened to the Madonna track quite a few times. Each time I became less and less impressed. I can't figure out what the song is about. None of the lyrics seem to make any sense." Marquee said, "The Madonna track could be from anyone. There's nothing of her in there, and it's just a little too busy for my liking. I like my Timberland sparse and staccato." EJD was sharp and staccato himself when he observed, "Sounds like Madonna got the bottom of the Timberland barrel." We accept all unsolicited reviews on our blog at blogs.guardian.co.uk/music or on the Facebook. So tell us what you think of Tapes and Tapes, The Kooks and Crystal Castles. You don't have to say anything nice either. And you can also say something about these following tracks, which are out to buy now. Dancing at discos, eating cheese on toast. Yeah. Kay Nash, Mary,
Happy.
You obviously, you didn't want to stick around. So I learnt from you. Do, do, do. Ta-do, do. Ta-do,
do. I'm into you and girl, no.
Chris Brown, with you.
Every kiss and every hug, you make me
strong as you are. Tender you go.
The Blunt, Carry You Home.
For the last time, a song for your heart.
So she can get a sensual seduction. So I can get a sensual seduction.
And Snoop Doggy Dog and Sensual Seduction.
Sensual Seduction. Sensual Seduction.
As the two in the studio collapse in hysterics about the thought of applying Snoop Doggy Dogg's sensual seduction to their own boss, I'd like to say thanks to Laura Barton and Michael Han for coming in to join us on Singles Club today. They really can't answer. But that is it for Singles Club. I'd like to say go check out Metronomy Joe's reviews on the site. They are neat. Next on Music Weekly... Next on Music Weekly, it's time to grow your hair long, mix peyote with your breakfast cereal, and fail to watch for a month. Yes, it's Yaysayer. That is Sunrise by Yaysayer. Now, the band from Brooklyn, New York, came to see Rosie the other week, and while she's naturally a big fan of their self-created genre of Middle Eastern psyche pop snap gospel, she kind of wanted to know what it meant all the same. So she asked them.
We put that up on our MySpace page the week that we put our MySpace page up, and it was just kind of a joke.
Yeah.
And I don't know how...
Here we are a year later.
We took it off. Yeah. We took it off
pretty soon. We took it off pretty quick.
But people have latched onto that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the term was just sort of like just to kind of get at the all-encompassing kind of nature of our music and that we were drawing from a variety of influences.
Right.
Okay, so tell me about some of those influences.
When we were starting, we were kind of conscious to rip off influences that weren't necessarily hip or cool.
Mm-hmm.
Musical theater or 90s pop, like Ace of Base kind of style stuff, and 80s stuff too. And
we started playing at a time when kind of the coolest music out there was stuff that didn't have a lot of people singing harmonies, and it was more straight ahead rock and roll.
So when was that? When did you start playing, get together as a band?
In early 2005.
Yeah.
I think 2005 was quite a strong year for post-punk revivalist bands, the kind of straight chords, clean.
Yeah, right. I didn't see any shows that year, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, TV on the Radio were still making music. Animal right. Collective was. Dirty Projector. I mean, Dirty Projectors are getting all this attention right now. This is their sixth album. It's insane.
It's insane. No, it's
and
amazing.
And it's the cover album that they're getting attention.
Right, right, right.
No, that's the other interesting thing is people talk about this Brooklyn scene. It's popping up and all this. But I think the reality of it is on the media radar, it wasn't considered at all.
Why do you think it's so important for someone like me to have to sort of say, okay, well, look, there's a scene here, to justify talking about why you like a band?
I don't know. I guess it's just a good story, you know? It's like, what are people going to write about? They're going to write about chord changes or lyrics the whole
yeah,
time?
But I think it makes
you could talk about a scene and the way people are dressing and a neighborhood that people are coming from. I think it's just the path of least resistance.
Okay, here's an example of me, a journalist, maybe creating a scene, but some of you guys, or maybe all of you guys, are actually from Baltimore originally.
Yeah, me and Chris are from Baltimore.
I'm from Philadelphia.
Which just goes to show some of the stuff I've read is like, you know, Baltimore band goes yeah. to Brooklyn, da, da, da. In my right. mind, Baltimore is somewhere that I've been really interested in because of artists like Dan Deacon and Celebration yeah. mm-hmm. and artists like sure. that.
But the thing is, all those artists, they moved to Baltimore.
Right.
You know, where,
why?
Rents are cheap. You can do that whole DIY kind of warehouse scene type mm-hmm. type thing. I didn't want to keep living in Baltimore because it just got pretty small after a while.
And you grew up your whole life there.
And I lived my whole life. I mean, I wasn't going to live with my parents the rest of my life. Yeah, it's not Italy or something.
That's why I think all of us moved. It's not Italy. I thought it was the Milan of the Northeast.
Yeah.
No, but that's why I moved out of Philly too. It's the same kind of thing.
Okay, well, let's talk about the album. All our symbols.
Is there a different pronunciation of our and our?
Well, over here it would say our or
ah.
So the pun maybe all, doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Something.
And we our. Still sell records here? How does that translate?
I picked up on, as other people have too.
The anagram, albums chorally.
Yes. But let's talk about that in a minute. No, there's like a sort of playoff between a sci-fi feel and a kind of environmental awareness to it. What I can't work out is what your message is. Is it utopian or dystopian?
Oh,
oh wow.
We've been asked that before.
You said it like you hadn't.
I wasn't at that interview.
I don't know. Isn't that what like Hitler was trying to create a utopia? Same with Stalin. And
I mean,
all those
he put his own
so
spin
is
on
the
it.
Row.
Well, that's what everyone's doing.
So
right?
is the row, though.
Like if we just kill all these people, we will have utopia.
Which I should say is not what you're trying to.
No, that's not.
No,
what we're trying
not
to
exactly.
So not then, on the other words. Hand, is dystopia? Is that the reality that we're describing? Maybe I don't know.
Okay, so 2080, which is a play on 2008.
No,
that was written in 2006. I didn't even think I was going to live to 2008 at that point.
Let alone 2008.
But it really works out well. Everyone says, like, I get it, like 1984 was 1948. Like, no, that was just Chris came up with that line because the in 2080, we're going to be dead, so carpe diem and live your life to the fullest kind of thing. And people picked up on that, like, 2080, we're all going to be dead.
Yeah. But for us, we're all going to die someday, guys. It's cool. It's all right. You know, not all the album is about dying. It's also about our loves, our dislikes, what you can live for. And I don't know. I think it's just a reaction to what the situation we're in right now. I can't sleep about the times we're living in, especially, you know, our government in America.
Hillary or Obama?
Obama. God, that's not even a question. Obama's the man. Our whole lives in America basically have been the same two families.
Yeah.
You know, he's not Jesus, but, you know, he's the best that I can
see. He's Black Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
So the writing of the album, do you all write it together? How does it work?
Ira wrote the catchy part in 2080. Oh.
Thanks.
Which one? There's two catchy parts.
The part.
Yeah, yeah.
But I came up with the chord progression, which makes it sit so nicely.
Right. And I wrote his guitar part. He wrote my bass part.
Yeah.
So that is an interesting way of working.
That's the way we simplify things, because I can't play bass that good, and Ira can't play guitar that good.
Yeah, so... If we each wrote our own part, we'd be just a jazz fusion
band. We'd be fish.
Well, now that we're entertaining ourselves.
this Guardian whiskey is good.
Allow me to enter back into...
Oh, yeah. Oh, hey, what's up?
What are we talking about?
Your live shows, one thing that people always seem to come away and say is that, hey, I loved it, but it was really different from the album.
When you get Tom in here to say, what's his description? The album is more ethereal, and the live show is more visceral.
Oh,
visceral, yes.
Man, I couldn't have said it better myself.
But I actually just answered a question this morning in an interview. It was like, do you guys have problems transferring the live show to tape? And with us, it's completely the opposite.
Mm.
You know, if we've done 20 overdubs of vocals in the studio, how do you transfer that to the live show? You can't really, unless you want to get 20 backup singers on there or sample 20 voices. And we do some sampling of singing.
Right.
I think with an album, you want people to be able to listen to it and to have it grow on you. And,
and
whereas a live show, you can be as poppy as possible. You need to be as direct because you want to win over people that have just maybe read about you in The Guardian, say.
Is this your first... big tour that you're embarking on now?
It is.
Is it how you imagined it would be?
I didn't expect it to be this glamorous.
You didn't expect to be sitting in a studio like this?
No, not at all.
These fancy microphones.
This chandelier is beautiful, by the way. It can get incredibly grueling and tiring. Berlin, for instance, I really want to see that city, but we have to leave right after the show to
It's not that great.
I was like, yeah. But, you know, as soon as you start complaining, the other side of it is, what else could you possibly...
Yeah, basically the way I look at it is, even if I'm completely miserable, when I have to listen to these other three guys yapping all day long...
Hey, come on. Other two guys.
It's usually not him. But even if I'm miserable the whole day, right when we start playing, I just have about an hour of just complete excitement and joy and happiness. And I realize that if I was doing anything else, I'd just be miserable all day long.
Yeah.
People halfway around the world are singing along to a song that I wrote in my moldy basement in Brooklyn, you know?
Right. It's pretty incredible awesome. Thing.
That's Yeisayer. So yay! They'll be back in the country in May, and their album All Hour, as in time, Cymbals, as in drums, remains out now. We just got time to run through some of the old FNF, that's Feedback and Friends. On the blog, Rosie's recently awarded title of Sexiest Weekly Music Podcast Voice came under threat. According to that frisky old dingo, Frisky Dingo, I think Laura Barton's voice should challenge Rosie Swash's voice to a no-holds-barred cage match for podcast voice supremacy. Although I must admit, my money is on Rosie. She looks like she fights dirty. I don't know why I read that in such an innocent voice when it's such a seedy sentiment. Anyway, Slim8589 bemoaned the frequent use of the word vibe in my interview with Tom Baker last week, and Mozwerk and Marquee took me to task for my pronunciation. Apparently, it's not Depeche Mode or Bondé de Rolé. Work that one out. Over on Facebook, Ida Augustsson reckons we make her Swedish bus journey better every day, and Jason Parks... that's Jason A. Parks to our blog users, wishes everyone would shut up about the Beatles. That means you, Ringo Starr. Some of our new friends include Paul Steves, Saul Brown, Julie McKegney, Eraj Yakubov, Lena Farrier and Suki Beg. And we've been invited to a Ben Sherman shopping event for some reason. I don't think we'll be able to attend. Post comments on this week's blog. Tell us what you made of We Are Mad Scientists and Yaysayer. The address is blogs.guardian.co.uk/music. As for next week, on this show, Kim Deal talks to Rosie Swash about spangly tops, killer chops, and the mystery of rock. That's all coming around to your computer this time next week. I hope you're looking forward to it. We certainly are. Register now to get the podcast sent straight to your computer or MP3 player for free. You can find out how at guardian.co.uk/music. Thanks again to Laura and Michael. I'll see you next week, and we'll be leaving you with a live acoustic version of After Hours by We Are Scientists. Goodbye.
Okay, everybody. Shut us out. But if we have to go now, I guess there's always hope that someplace we'll be serving after hours. This night is winding down, but time means nothing. As always at this hour, our time means nothing. One final round, 'cause time means nothing. Say that you'll stay. Say that you'll stay. Drunk enough that we're finally soaking up the hours that everyone else throws away. And if we have to go now, I guess there's always hope tomorrow night will be more of the same. This night is winding down, but time means nothing. As always at this hour, our time means nothing. One final round, 'cause time means nothing. Say that you'll stay. Say that you'll stay. Say that you'll stay.
We're all right where we're supposed to be. 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 Guts to shut us out. Time means nothing. Time means nothing. One final round, 'cause time means nothing. Say that you'll stay.
And the thing is, there are 50 people in this room.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.